Hello and welcome to Inside the Manny. My name is Matt Dean. And my guest today is Glenda Dean. Yes, it's my mother. Hello, Mum.
Hello, boy.
How are you doing?
I'm feeling slightly odd on my terrace with all this equipment. It's a new experience for me. However, carry on.
Well, it's a lovely terrace, so we're actually sat outside Mum's single-storey house in Stupa on the terrace, looking out at a very well-manicured, beautiful garden. Have you just had it trimmed?
Yes, by others. Yes.
Right. So anyway, we're talking to Mum today about a 70-year plus fascination and passion about
obsession
about Greece and this area in particular. So, can you describe arriving in Kalamata with Dad in October 1986? When the town had just suffered a fairly severe earthquake.
Right. Well, I'd never been to Kalamata before. It was our first visit, so I wasn't quite knowing what to expect. But I have to say that the main reaction was total shock. I'd read in the press about the earthquake, but it had played it down. Yes, it had said 20 people had been killed, but then 20 on an earthquake scale is not actually small fry. Mm. And it had referred nothing, made no mention of the extensive damage. So I thought, right, it's going to be fine. So we arrived and picked up the car at the airport. And it was 8 o'clock in the evening and dark. And somehow the street lighting wasn't working properly, so which made it even darker. So when we drove along from the airport and turned right to follow the riverbed, I suddenly saw these huge military style, almost tents, parked in rows along the riverbed and thought, what's going on here? And when we turned left to the Paralia, these tents continued on the beach, where the beach was deep and wide enough to accommodate them. There were huge tents, obviously housing dispossessed people. And then the next thing that struck me was a very strange silence. Every single Greek town I've ever been to at 8 or 9 o'clock in the evening buzzes. The bars are lively, there's music, there's laughter, there's shouting. There was silence. There were more than one or two, open on the seafront, but so low-key and subdued. It was uncomfortable. We felt that we were intruding in a place that was trying to get itself back together. So we just whizzed along that Paralia, because it was just too upsetting. And we stayed the first night, the other side of Kalamata, out of it all. And it wasn't until we returned a week later to give the car back daylight when I saw what the reality was.
And what was that?
That was buildings that were those tall buildings in Kalamata, some of them completely collapsed, others with great bulges in their upper stories, some still standing, looking quite secure. But what I noticed was that every house or building had a great big cross in either green or red. And red signified this house needs to be demolished, it's insecure.
Right.
Green, you passed the test and you survived.
Wow.
But it took 5 years, I then discovered, for Kalamata to get back to what it was originally. The damage was really much, much more extensive than the pathetic reports in the English press suggested.
And, of course, there was no internet or anything in those
days to get a better
idea.
It was just a one-day wonder in the English press. And they didn't realise that the reason why there were so relatively few people killed is that because everybody, well, 80% at least of the population of Kalamata was out to launch a great big new ship in the harbour, and that's a big event in Greece. And so they were all out to join in the fun and the games of that, and therefore not at home and vulnerable to houses collapsing on them.
So that was just...
It was a miracle,
a
really.
A bit of luck, and indeed, yeah, a miracle. Okay, so knowing in advance what happened, I guess some people would have sort of cancelled the trip or found somewhere else to go, but you didn't. Why was that?
Well, partly because I'm stubborn and partly through frustration. There's a backstory here that I have to go into a little to explain the frustration.
Please tell us. Yep.
Because I'm obsessed with Greece, and I don't know how many holidays we've had in Greece. Umpteen islands, the usual run of things. But I was always drawn back to the Peloponnese, always, always. Partly, I think, because it's steeped in history. And from Mycenaean times through Athens, through Byzantine era, everything in between and since, the Peloponnese has featured large. And the northern Peloponnese is well known. I mean, Olympia and Nafplion are on everybody to tourist track. Further south you come, the more remote it is, and the more Greek, and therefore it appealed. The three prongs, therefore, the western one is easy because it's small, it's not mountainous, and we've been there two or three times. The other two, the middle one and the Monivassia one, are much bigger challenges. So in 1995, the year before this, I'd found a house on the Manabassia prong to house about 10 friends of mine. And we had an idyllic month. Actually, you came out, didn't you?
I did, with older brother Dan, and that's where I got my A-level results. Which I did. Well, you were one of my teachers, and people might find that a bit odd that my mum taught me, but I got an A because she's so good.
Shut up.
Anyway, Monivassia.
Yes. So Monivassia was brilliant. We had a wonderful holiday. And the idea was that the friends would then go back to England, leaving Dad and me an extra week to hire a car in Ithion or Areopoli and explore the missing piece of the jigsaw, the middle prong, the Mani.
Right.
Because everything was public transport in those days. Car hire was not all that common. We got to Ithion and we got to Areopoli. Not a car hire outfit in sight. They didn't know anything about it. So, what do we do now? No buses, as far as I could discover, went south to Hierro Libanes. So we had no choice but to go north on the bus. Lovely scenery. We were enjoying ourselves. And it stopped in Agios Nikolaos first, after climbing the mountains. We nearly got off there, because it was a charming, enticing, inviting little fishing village. But it was August, it was hot, and didn't have a beach. We thought, no, we'll wait. The bus carries on straight up the main road, bypassing Stupa, which incidentally I'd never even heard of anyway. Next stop, Karthimeli. Karthimeli had been more developed, and I had heard of it, and Homer mentions it. So I said to Dad, get off here quick, which we did, and we stayed in an olive grove somewhere for 3 days. And that was my first real Mani experience.
Which completely, well, literally bypassed Stupa.
Yes, totally, totally.
Right.
And Karthimeli was, as it is now still rather, handsome, handsome, well-developed in some ways, but curiously, I've always found unfriendly. I've never warmed to Karthimeli. The people aren't outgoing. But we had a fine time. And one high spot for me, it's a ridiculous one, is that only one bar was open, and one taverna. My evening tipple is, and always has been, a gin and tonic. In those days, 40 years ago, Greece hardly heard of gin and tonic outside Athens or Nafplion. But I always asked. So we went to this little bar off the street, and I said, "Echi gin tonic?" And to my amazement, the answer came, "Ver, ver." I nearly fell off the chair.
Easily pleased.
Importantly pleased. So he presented me with this delightful gin and tonic. I'm still thinking, why have they got gin and tonic in this remote Marni village? And then it dawned on me, it's Patrick Lefermer and all his friends. It's their legacy. And I should be eternally grateful to him for giving me a gin and tonic in the Marni.
Forget the books. Okay. Yeah. So let's go back then to the following year. Tell the story then of the hired car and Kalamata.
Yes. Well, we enjoyed the rest of the trip. We went over to Pylos. We went back to England. But I was determined that the following year, 1996, we would get to the Marni. So it was going to be sorted this time. I booked a flight to Athens, a flight from Athens to Kalamata, because although it didn't have international flights, it had internal Greek flights. Mm-hmm. And then the plan was to hire a car there and do the whole of the Marni. Fine. Booked the flights, and in the middle of September, I thought maybe I ought to get round to booking the car. And then suddenly I read in the paper, earthquake.
Right.
And I'm thinking, do car hire places operate in the middle of an earthquake or post-earthquake? Well, I don't know. I'm thinking about this in bed on Sunday morning in the Observer, and suddenly, I don't know why, my eye literally, fate is to do with all this. I suddenly spotted an advert from an estate agent in Saffron Walden, of all places, offering houses for sale in the Kalamata area. I thought, what? And it said, local agent will guide you. So I thought, rang him up, nice man, Robert, and explained that I was thinking of going out, and I'd seen he had this advert. And before I knew what was happening, we'd suddenly become prospective purchasers because it was the only way forward.
But you weren't.
No, I wasn't at all. All I wanted was a car, the certainty that a car would meet me at the airport.
Mm.
So I rang him up and I booked a car. It's not a total lie because we always intended to buy in Greece, but only when my youngest son had finished university, and that was 2 or 3 years down the line. However, it worked. We landed in Kalamata. There was the agent, one Charles Byrne, to greet us, and he was fantastic. He was a mix. I think it was half Irish and half Greek. What a mixture. He was fun. He it was who drove us through this silent, dark city, explaining. Right. He knew the hotel that was clear of all this.
Right.
He got us into it. And the next morning, we had to get up and we viewed a house in Verga. And then he took us to view another house in Kytrias.
So you're getting a free tour of Manny from a real estate agent.
Car.
Okay. Oh, you paid for the hire car, not him.
No, me.
Okay. Fair enough.
And then I said, he said, before I show you the next house, I want to take you to have lunch in a favourite village of mine. And that favourite village turned out to be Stupa.
Wow. Okay.
And we had lunch, an early lunch, in Petros Histoverna, which is sadly no longer there, but was our second home for years. It was an idyllic October day. The sun shone. There wasn't a soul around. The sea was like a mill pond. The beach was empty. Petros, who owned the taverna, was a real character. And Rod and I looked at each other and we thought, we've got to come clean. So we cleared our throats and said, Charles, we've got something to tell you. We're not actually looking quite yet for a house. And we explained why we'd done all this. And shows what sort of man he was. He just cracked out laughing. Instead of being angry, as had every right to be, he just laughed. So we got on. So we took him back to the bus stop because he didn't have a car. and he had to get back to Kalamata. And we kept the car.
Producer Jeff is amused.
And went down the rest of the money. We stayed in the Stupa Hotel, which was open, only for us, it was empty otherwise, that night, and got up at crack of dawn the next day to do the money, which was the purpose of the whole trip. Well, I think we had an early coffee in Lemeni, breakfast, and then we had lunch in Hierro Lemenas, and then we went round the bottom past Porto Cayo, and before I knew what was happening, we did Vathia as well. Well, we were up the other side, and we were approaching Ithion, and it was still only about 6 o'clock, and we'd done the money in a day.
It's so possible.
Well, it is. So we'd allowed a whole week. So Dad and I looked at each other and said, well, what are we going to do now? And then like that, we both said at once, back to Stupa.
Right.
So we drove back over, and they hadn't even taken the sheets off our bed in the Stupa Hotel. We just rebooked, and we stayed there for the whole week.
So on that first visit then, you spend, in the end, 6 days in Stupa.
Exactly.
And earlier you mentioned Petros Taverna. Maybe some people aren't aware of where that was. And so in general, can you just kind of paint a picture of what the Stupa Paralia was like for you in those 6 days all those years ago?
Sheer bliss. Petros Taverna is where Jimmy's gift shop now is, and Stecky and Rothy, as it was. It therefore was right on the seafront. No fancy pavements in those days. It was right, tamarisk trees, shade if you wanted to sit on the edge of the beach. And it was Petros himself, though, who made it. He's a character, a very, very Greek character, difficult to describe, unorthodox, cheeky, full of irony, not much English, just a total pleasure to be with. He had me laughing from the minute.
And I still see him every time I go to the Neohori Cafe Neon. He's playing cards, yeah. And he's still the same.
Yeah. Yes.
And the beach?
Empty. You see,
this is October, though, huh?
This is October, but it was only ever in August when the Athenians came down for their holidays to their family homes, mostly, that Stupa suddenly became alive. The rest of the year, it was a really quiet Greek village. As I said, three tavernas only, one Cafe Neon. Five Brothers was a Cafe Neon. Pefko was still there, it existed then. Mm-hmm. And then Acteon was a taverna, not a bar.
It was, yep.
Otherwise, nothing. It was so beautiful. With the mountains behind, the sea, it was the place. It ticked every single box I could think of. And Dad and I decided, right, we want to come here next summer holiday. We were all teachers. And we want a house for a month, which would take 10 of us.
So this would have been planning for the summer of 87.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, of course, such a thing didn't exist. We didn't want to go to a hotel. And I nagged and nagged and persisted. And eventually I found an English person who had an English neighbour whose house was always empty. And she thought he might let it above Calogria. So we went to look at it, peered in through all the windows. Perfect. Got hold of his number. And, yes, he would let it to us for the princely sum of £100 a week. I mean, it was crazy.
Outrageous.
And there were 10 of us, so it cost 10 quid. I mean, you know, daft. But you see, it was a Calogria then that you can't imagine today. Think of Calogria without a single bar or taverna or apartment. Just that little house on the promontory and one other cottage set further back. Tamarisk trees to give you shade, and otherwise just white sand and clear aquamarine water. It was unbelievably beautiful.
Was there no tavernas or bars at all?
None.
Costas and Renner weren't there?
No, not for ages. They're newcomers, upstarts.
Okay, so that's the summer of 87.
The first bar there was Paralos.
Yep.
And that was, I would say, about 92.
Right, okay. And how did 87 go? Did you, well, I know you did. You booked it again the next year.
We had such a wonderful holiday. We used to have the morning on the beach in Calogria and then come down to Stupa for the evenings where there was a little bit more life, but not much, not much. And we never heard an English voice. Never, and that was what was drew me to it. So, yes, we hired it that year, we hired it the following year, and we hired it in 1989 as well, so that's 3 years running.
So that third visit, 1989, I came out for
you
the
did?
First time and slept with a whole load of other people on the balcony of that house.
As many men. We sometimes had up to 20 sleeping there. It was crazy. My three sons all came, and they usually brought friends, and they all had to sleep wherever they could. And it was wonderful. The freedom, nobody ever shut the front door because we only had one key between 20 people.
Yeah, no, I remember it. And when you left to go back to work at the end of that summer, I didn't have a job to go back to, so I stayed on. And I had nowhere to sleep then, so I slept on Calogria Beach.
Well, what a mother's house is for, other than that. But something really important, happened also in that year that you were out there, to go back to Charles Byrne, the guy who introduced me to Stupa at Petrus's. Charles Byrne, we kept up with him because we got on, but only very vaguely. He suddenly arrived in the middle of our holiday in Calogria, really excited with plans, because he and his partner in Saffron Walden had bought a chunk of olive grove in the heart of Stupa, and they had planning permission for 13 houses, and he wanted to show us. And of course, whether he was playing a long game all along, being a businessman, and knew he could reel us in 3 years later, I don't know. But by Christmas, we'd put a deposit down on one of the so-called English houses as a holiday home. And that was it, really. For the next umpteen years, we came out two or three, four times a year, stayed in it. They were perfect holiday homes. And it was all thanks to Charles.
Right, so what comes around, goes around, yeah, nice. And of course, you and Dad being teachers and then Dad's sadly dying in 98, I'd run out of steam in the UK and so persuaded you to let me come out and live in your English house because most of the time it was empty. And then every time you came out with your mates, I had to vacate the house and find somewhere else to stay.
Quite right.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, there were And then we get to the stage of you retiring. And so the scenario there is I am still in your English house, which was designed to be a holiday home, not, I mean, they're not huge houses, are they?
No.
And so you initially kept your house in the UK, but wanted to kind of experiment with how long you wanted to be out here in your English house. And so you promptly told me to get out.
Not immediately. The plan always had been, when Dad was alive, when we retired, that we would split the time. Dad was too much of a workaholic. He would want to leave England totally. So we would do six months split throughout the year. On my own, this was different. Because in England, without my job, which I loved, I was bored to death. In Greece, I am never bored. So I came out and loved it here, stayed through the whole winter, realised the English house wasn't equipped for winter living. It was too cold. It wasn't big enough. Kicked you out. And then decided, right, I'm never going back to England to live. I've got a big house there with a big garden. I'm going to get rid of it. So I sold the house in England, b- bought this plot here, which is, what, a stone's throw from the English houses.
It is.
And had a stone house built, and I've lived in it very happily ever since. I'm sorry I kicked you out, Matt, but it had to be done.
It's all right. I've recovered from that trauma after years of therapy. And, of course, so once you'd sold your UK house, you could bring out everything from that house and install it here. So all of your books.
Yes, books were a problem. I had to reduce, I think I had about 1,500 in the house in England.
Right.
And I obviously couldn't house that many here. So I had a really agonising week, which ones to bring and which ones not. Cats were easier. I only had two, and I couldn't possibly leave them there because they were getting old and a bit pathetic. So I had to bring them out too. And while I was bringing cats and books, I thought I'd bring comfy beds. So we did a ship room, and you benefited from that enormously.
You mean the Marks and Spencer's bed?
Yes, and the table, and the sofa.
Yeah, okay. I was very grateful. Well, it is a lovely house, and you designed it well with Andonis Thormaeus, which is perhaps the next sort of topic area to discuss, in that we've talked about the place back in the old days, we've talked about properties that you've either rented or lived in. Let's talk now about the local people that you met from the early days onwards.
Yes, who made it, really. And before we get to Adoni, I think the one I would put first was the waiter at Petrol Sister Verna, mm-hmm. Panagos. You will know him, and everybody else will know him, as one of the owners of Parallels Bar on Calogria. But then he was a student at Patras University doing maths, but he worked virtually full-time, as far as I could see, for most of the months of the year in Petros. And he's a delight. He wanted to improve his English. I wanted to improve my Greek. So at the end of every evening, we would sit down and we had an arrangement. One night we would talk Greek, and the next night we would talk English. And he introduced me so much about the Greeks. I can remember him saying, "Now, Glenda, you have to understand that when Greeks are shouting at each other in a bar or a taverna, they're not quarrelling. They're simply having an animated conversation. Don't get worried." So I learned that. He said, "And when a Greek says to you, 'I'll meet you at 11:30, it will be any time from 12 onwards." I mean, all these little sort of tips he kept, it would just crease me up with laughter. But he did. And he wanted to improve his English, which he'd learnt mostly from the television, and therefore it was American. And I remember one evening he said, "That man there who's just come in, you know, he's an Essel." I said, "He's what?" "An Essel." I said, "Well, what's an Essel?" And then, of course, it was arsehole with an American accent. "He's an asshole." I said, "Panagotis, it's not, and you mustn't say that word." You know, daft. But I loved him, and I still love him.
And didn't he also tell you other stories? One about busing a whole load of people from Patra, and the other one about
his illegal
exams?
Greek side, which he made no attempt to hide. Yes. The system in Greece is that each local authority gets a grant from central government to run things. And it depends on the size of the village, i.e. the census. And it was census time. And Panagiotis was at Patras University. And Stupa was about 150 inhabitants short of getting a real big whack from central government. So he organised 3 coachloads of students, offered them a free weekend in Stupa, got the hotel owners to put them up for free. Each taverna would give them one meal. And then they, for some reason, would go on the Stupa census, Why, I don't know. That's just Greece. And therefore, I mean, it's totally illegal, but Stupa's numbers were boosted and they benefited. But it's so Greek. And he also told me, he used a Greek word, I've forgotten it now. It's a word for a rolled up piece of paper. And I said, well, what do you mean a rolled up piece of paper? And he said, well, you write on it dates and formulae and important things, and you roll it up and you put it in the turnip and your jeans when you do exams. And of course, we both being teachers looked thoroughly shocked, because to us, English capstone, it was cheating.
Disgraceful behaviour.
Panayotis just burst out laughing and said, you are just so English. I said, well, I know we are. But, and he said, no, look, I want to do well in my exams. My parents want me to do well in exams. My teachers want me to do well in exams. What does a little piece of paper in my jeans? It fits in. So I thought, well, there's a certain sense there.
There is a certain logic, yeah. Okay.
So and then his mother invited us to the house because we obviously used to buy Panayotis drinks. He was a student. He had no money. So as a favour, Evthymia invited Rodomy to have supper there. And because Panagos knew what we ate, because he took our orders every night, she had made every single dish we'd ever eaten. And we arrived there to a table that was so laden. And we felt we had to eat everything because she'd gone to all this trouble. And we literally could not move. We had to walk right around Stupa for about an hour before we could go home to bed. They were lovely. Not a word of English. And when I suddenly came out with Lipon, that they fell about laughing because they understood that. It was just lovely.
Yeah, the good old days, yeah.
Lovely family.
So that was Panagos and the Raptaeus family. You've mentioned Petros. Did you kind of... Are there any stories of friendship with that guy?
Well, he's a puzzle to me because... How would you describe Petros? He's wicked. He has a wicked sense of humour. He's married to Aleka. They're a lovely couple, and they too had us to supper up at their house when, for 1 year, he wasn't a tavernarone, he was a butcher. So we had, Ron and I went up, not a word of English in Aleka, odd words with Petros. Dad understood a bit of Greek. So really it was left to me, which was a real strain. So we got through the evening in fits of laughter over daft things. And then I thought, we've survived, we can go home. It was about 9:30, we'd been there at 7:00. I thought, that's okay. And suddenly the cards came out. Because obviously, well, you know, Dad, he never played cards in his entire life. Mm. And Petros plays cards, as you just told me, every night.
Indeed,
So that, again, was we just fell about laughing because I had to say, no, my husband does, blah, 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 blah. It's very difficult to describe Petros. He's the opposite from Adoni, who you also mentioned, who built this house, who is also typically Greek, but the opposite. Adoni is reserved, professional, utterly reliable, generous to a fault. You knew exactly where you were with him. You never know where you are with Petros.
No.
You leap from one to another.
But again, you went for evening meals at Andoni's house.
Yes.
Which were much more formal
and much less fun in a way. But they were so kind. That's the thing that links them all. There is a kindness and a generosity about Greeks. Somehow Andoni had discovered... It was my 70th birthday. How, I don't know. So suddenly an enormous, beautiful gardenia was delivered to this terrace on that morning. You know, well, why would you bother to do that for just one of your clients? He was just a sweetheart.
Yeah, and I remember one really kind thing that Petros did was get in touch with you when Dad did die in 98.
How he knew he died, I don't know.
No.
It was November. We'd gone back in August. Dad died in early November, and suddenly I got a fax, didn't I? How Petros accessed a fax, I don't know.
Well, probably from Andoni's office.
Yes.
I mean, where else would there have been a fax? I don't know.
It did make me cry, that.
Of course it did. Yeah. Yeah.
Kindness.
So we're looking at a period of 40 years. So you've obviously seen changes. Do you want to sort of give your view on those changes?
Well, it's a difficult one to answer. Obviously, I would prefer it to be as it was in 1990, 1986 even. It was just so, so Greek and unspoilt. It was heaven. But life moves on, and you can't, the whole of Europe has changed, and there isn't a place that isn't touristy. I hadn't quite realised how the English were going to take over the place. Before the motorway from Athens to Kalamata was built, and before Kalamata Airport was open to international travel, it was difficult to get here. So English people didn't come. And then all of a sudden it's accessible. And house property prices in English soared. You could sell a terraced house for next to nothing and come out and live here. And they thought of it as a place where the sun always shone and the wine was dirt cheap. They've mostly, understandably, died off by now or gone back home to die. And even so, the ones that are left, I mean, they're all right, but there's just too many of them. You go out in an evening in the winter to a Greek taverna and all you hear is English voices. And I find that sad. I also, of course, cannot stand sunbeds. It is my real bête noire, serried ranks of sunbeds on Stupa Beach. And I want you, when I die and I'm buried in that graveyard, on my headstone, I want, "She never used a sunbed."
That will be the craziest, what do you call it? Epitaph. Yeah. Are you serious?
I'm now 88 and I can still get up and down from the beach. And it.
Are you serious?
Yes. In Greek.
Right, okay. I'll bear that in mind.
A challenge, Matt.
I understand what you're saying about the sort of dominance of the English voice being heard in tavernas throughout the year, really. But you're English.
Half English. Yes, I know. But really, I think it's a mistake that I'm English. I should be Greek because I've been driven by my obsession with Greece all my life. From the age of 8, when I found the section on Greek mythology in my encyclopedias, and I loved those stories and I read and reread them, to grammar school where I picked up ancient Greek. I went on then to Cambridge to study classics and then spent 43 years teaching it. It's always been Greece that has driven me. And when I came to live here, and I wanted to be part of the inheritance of that country. And I think if you go and live in somebody else's country, you should try to adopt the culture of that country. Now, that means attempting some of the language. It's not easy, I admit. I had advantages in, at least I had ancient Greek, but even so, it was difficult. But what I don't like is the people who make no attempt even to learn to say Ευχαριστώ, and particularly the ones who moan on about rubbish collection and all the things that in English England we take for granted, but for which we pay thousands a year in council tax. Mm. And what do we pay here? Something like 100 euros a year. So that's not to say they're all like that. They're not. there are lots of people who do appreciate Greece for different reasons. I'll shut up.
Well, you're perfectly entitled to your opinion.
Yes. I don't go on about it.
No, you don't. And I sort of, I agree, I think, in essence. So, just a while back you mentioned at the time of us doing this recording that 2 days ago you were 88, and you don't mind people knowing that?
Not remotely.
And I think part of the reason is that the general reaction is, no way, you don't look it. But maybe we could finish with some chat about being 88 and the inevitable...
And the problems that brings.
The problems that might bring, because there'll be listeners out there who I'm sure will be interested in your views on healthcare in the area.
Oh. Well, it featured in... Because when I was 80 and I decided, right, my days of going back and forth to England are over. I can't stand airports. I've got to decide where I want to end up, here or England. And it took 2 seconds. It was here. But it's a mixed blessing. And I see why most people go back to England for the end, as it were. But that's partly because they don't have enough language to get by here. I have enough to get by, but no more. So they go back for security. I would say two things to people dithering on that question. One is entirely in Greece's favour. It's quick. Where else can you go and see your GP, Sophia, in the morning and see her that morning? And go, she sends you for blood tests. You go along the road, you do them, and you have the results sent to you by email that evening. In England, that whole process would take forever. You then, as a result maybe of the blood test, you need to go and see a specialist in Kalamata. You ring up, you get an appointment next week. So in terms of speed, in terms of care, because they all care visibly, and there's a brilliant heart doctor just up the road by the garage. The downside is that Kalamata is a provincial hospital and its provision is provincial. If you have something complicated, cancer, for example, it's Athens, and that is a nuisance. So it's a bargain. You take a gamble.
Yeah.
I've been to Athens once when they discovered heart arrhythmia, and so they were going to put a pacemaker in, and you had to go to Athens for that. But it wasn't half as bad as I thought it was going to be. It was actually quite simple. But if it was a long-term treatment, being stuck in Athens.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Hopefully.
But I've had nothing but good treatment here.
Yeah. And we've been to Kalamata a few times to see a few varied specialists. And the whole thing's just so quick and cheap. I mean, okay, that if you're not going to the hospital and you're going to... basically private, okay, you have to pay, but it's not expensive, is it?
It's nothing. I had a private appointment in England over an ongoing issue that was discovered here, and I had a half an hour appointment, and it cost £250 to see in England privately. Here, you get half an hour or more for €50.
Yeah, you know, yeah. Okay, well, I think we'll
on
wind down.
On
the, yes, I'll get going on the headstone. but to finish, a quick fire question: what three words would you use to describe how you feel about this area?
Oh dear, adjectives or nouns?
Up to you.
Contentment, beauty. The sea, daily swims for 7 months of the year are so good for the soul, let alone the body.
And I know you really enjoy looking back up, you know, getting that sea view of the mountains.
You swim through the silly, noisy things on the fringe of the, you know, in August particularly, the kids are all playing and having a lovely time. Once you got past them and you're out a bit and you turn over on your back to float and you look back at those mountains, there is nothing like it.
Yeah, that's a nice note to end on. So thanks for your time, Mother. Have a good evening. And thanks again.